Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. Woo! It is summertime. Glad to have you here with me. From looking at the numbers, I know we're down a little bit on live callers today, live listeners, simply because it is summertime. So I know a lot of people are out running around and doing their family vacations. So many of you will catch this on the podcast and in the evening. Maybe returning some emails on the treadmill. I have so many people who send me an email once in a while and tell me about their exercise and how they catch my podcast while they're working out. So for all of you on the treadmill, keep going. Don't give up. Burn some calories. You can do it. And and thank you. For all of you that are new to the show, this is the Mark Kohler Show with yours truly, Mark Kohler, today. Here July 30th, 2013, and we've got an awesome show for today. This is a show all about saving taxes, building wealth, protecting our assets, and we've got a guest today that I think many of you are going to be really interested to hear from, the author Glenn Croston, author of the book 75 Green Businesses You Can Start to Make Money and Make a Difference. So we're going to be talking about that, and I like that topic even in the broader sense that it gets us thinking about small business strategies for those of you that are still trying to find that perfect home-based business to supplement income and create tax write-offs, but also for those of you out there that already own a small business and are looking for ways to diversify your product mix and your services and think green. You may be able to tap into some new customers, some new product lines, things like that, that could actually help you make more money and make a difference. So we're going to be going into the green topic here near the bottom of the hour. And until then, we're just going to hit our normal tips, strategies, and updates, kind of help all of you in your quest to better live the American dream. I'm sitting here looking out over the beautiful blue sunny skies of Southern California, drinking my Monster Energy Zero Ultra. I don't know if any of you tried this thing. This is awesome. I don't know how much caffeine it's got, but it's like pouring nitroglycerin on dynamite here, because I'm fired up today already, so I'm flying high. Woo! Excited to be here. So, hey, before we get to our tipsters, we regularly have a couple experts from our office share a little story or example of a client interaction. Names not shared, of course. We've got Jaron Bergeson and Dustin Johnson coming on here in a moment. But before then, let me make a couple quick announcements. I actually wrote a new blog article I was really excited about. I was about to post it on my blog, and entrepreneur.com picked it up. They want to post it on their main site this week. So when they do that, I have to hold off on my personal blog. So many of you will see this later this week, and it's a really fun article I've never written before, and it's about helping your college student pay for college tuition this fall by starting a small business. I'd like to get into some of those points today if we have time before Glenn comes on the show. I give 10 steps to help your college students start their business this fall. And it really has hit home for me because my incredible son, Dylan Kohler, is headed off to college. And so we've been working on his little small business, and it's really been a treat. So may talk about that here in a moment. But look out for that article. That's going to come out later this week. Help your student pay for tuition this fall at college by starting a small business. Also, I just want to highlight here, we've only got 2 days left if you want to save $50 on the workshops this fall. I've got 6 locations around the country. It's on a Saturday, and I've now implemented, because no one believed me when I just talked about it casually, so it is now in writing. I've got a $1,000
money-back guarantee that if I don't save you at least $1,000 in taxes when you come out on a Saturday, and I know I can save you probably $3,000 to $5,000 in taxes with some ideas and concepts and strategies new to 2013, if I don't do that, I'll write you a check at the end of the workshop and give you a full refund. So I'm that confident that if you show up, I know I will save you big money. The cost of the workshop is $300. Spouse comes for free. Your kids under age 18 for free. I love to have kids in the room and talk about setting up a lemonade stand. Please bring them. The locations are New York, Chicago, Seattle, Northern Cal, Southern Cal, and then wrapping it up in Hawaii December 7th. Make it a tax write-off. Visit any of those locations for fun. Make it a weekend trip. Look at your rental properties. Come to the workshop and make it a tax-deductible trip as well. Love to have you. If you register in the next 2 days, it's $50 off the ticket price. We're trying to book hotels and reservations, so we'd like to get an early bird pricing model out there, and then we'll be back to $300. It's $250 in the next 24 hours, 48 hours. So get to the website or call in and get registered. Other than that, we're just plugging along. It's July payroll, folks. If you have an S corporation or employees, your payroll reports are due in 2 days. So make sure you get that done. I know some of you have maybe put that off. You will get nasty letters from the IRS. They are tenacious. The IRS is tenacious about making sure they get their payroll fees. So get in and get that done. If you need some help with that, you can call Cynthia at our office at K&E CPAs. Of course, if you're listening to this show, you know how to find us. Just get to the law firm or accounting firm, call the 1-800 number, boom, just ask for Cynthia and you're in and rolling. So I think you'll love it. Well, let's go to one of our experts here. And again, for our many new listeners, our show today is being featured on Blog Talk Radio. Is one of their top shows this week, which we're excited about. And so we've got a number of new listeners catching the show. So again, if you've just joined us, we're going to be talking with author Glenn Crosten. Later in the hour, 75 green businesses you can start to make money and make a difference in the world today. And until then, we're going to talk about living your American dream, saving taxes, building wealth, and protecting your assets. So let's head over to Jaron Bergeson. He's an attorney in our office out of the Utah office and just is incredible. Been changing the lives of many of our clients for years. Jaron, are you on the line with us?
I am. I'm here. Excited to be here, Mark.
Well, thanks, Jaron. I think all of your summer vacations are over, so you're settled in and buckled back in for another fall of work, aren't you?
You got it.
Well, if you get rid of those family reunions early in the summer, it makes the rest of the summer a lot more enjoyable. So,
no doubt.
Yeah, you know, I got my family reunion coming at the end of the summer, so still kind of that delayed gratification of the summer experience, but that's okay.
There you go.
Family reunions are fun. Gives you a chance to renew those friendships and hatreds. It's awesome. Anyway, so Jaron, what do you got for us this week?
Well, you know, I meet with a lot of clients, and I met with some folks earlier, actually it was last week, and they came to me and they said, look, we've got various pieces of real estate that we own. We own our own home, we own a vacation home, and we have two rental properties. We've got a revocable living trust, we've done that, but all of our properties, our rentals, our second home, which is our vacation home, and our personal residence, they're all owned in our name. And I had to scratch my head a little bit. And luckily, this is a situation where we can help people get things set up the right way. But I had to look at them and go, well, we need to make some changes to your setup there. It doesn't make a lot of sense to have a revocable living trust and at least not have your home owned in the name of that trust. It's not really doing you any good. You're not going to be able to point to the trust or your heirs won't be able to point to that trust when you're gone and say, look, distribute this property to us like the trust says if the property's not owned in the name of the trust. So that was the first thing we did.
Yeah, great point. Now let me throw this out. I'm going to twist put you kind of on the defense here, and
okay.
have you think on your toes here. Last week on our open forum show, you weren't on the show. We covered the funding of the trust in your home with several questions last week. So I want to maybe let's twist your comment here a little bit, and let me throw something at you. If I was sitting in the room, okay, so it's time to fund my trust and put my home or my assets into my trust. Do I use a quitclaim deed, a warranty deed, a grant deed? Tell me the process. What's the concern there?
We're almost always going to suggest that you do that by warranty deed, or some states call it a grant deed. Usually a warranty deed and a grant deed mean the same thing. The reason being, quitclaim deeds really are a little bit less secure. Title insurers and other folks don't like to see them in the chain of title because they have to do a little bit more research and find out what did that person actually have. Because when you do a quitclaim, when someone does a quitclaim deed, all they're saying is, I'm giving you whatever interest I have in this property. So if I have no interest, I'm giving you nothing. But there's no warranty that I actually own the property or that it's free and clear of any encumbrances. So when you're deeding the property into your trust, you want to do it by warranty deed or grant deed.
I like it. One of the stories, some of you listeners may be shocked by this. This kind of sent shockwaves through the legal industry about 5 years ago. There was a woman down in Nevada who deeded her home into her own trust. And when she did that, she used a quitclaim deed. Well, about a year later, there was a dispute over the lot line. One of the neighbors built a fence and encroached on her property, and she said, oh, that's my property line. You can't build a fence over that. And, of course, it turned into a big fight, ended up in court, and she went to her title company and said, hey, defend me here. I bought title insurance. You told me where the lot line was. You need to defend me. And the title company's like, all right, let's get into it. So they got into it, and as soon as they found out that she had quitclaimed the property to her trust, they said, oh, well, we're not required to cover you because you don't own the property anymore. It's in your trust name. So too bad, too sad. If you would have used a warranty deed, the title policy would have transferred with the warranty deed, but because you used a quitclaim deed, you no longer own it. You know, we have no longer a right to defend the trust. We only had a duty to defend you, and you don't own it anymore. So you violated the terms of the title policy. And all the lawyers freaked out, and the lawyers that recommended this quitclaim deed to her ended up paying the bill in this big dispute, and it was just a nightmare. And so I think 5 years ago, this is when lawyers waked up and said the warranty deed is the way to go. Now, Jeremy, in California, we have a lot of listeners on the West Coast that use grant deeds. Essentially, you use warranty language in the grant deed, and that's the way to get around it. I mean, would you expound on that maybe?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the grant deed in California uses all of the warranty language. It's just a different kind of terminology and nomenclature, but it gets you to the same point, which is, yeah, you're gonna preserve whatever title insurance you had for you personally when you transfer the property into your trust name if you do it by warranty deed. It's just that lack of any sort of guarantee or warranty when you do a quitclaim deed that can have you run into trouble. So quitclaim deeds are used by people who don't oftentimes by people who maybe don't know what the lot line is or don't know what exactly their interest is. So they're just saying, look, whatever I have, I'm giving to you. You're right. Title insurers and sometimes lenders don't like to see that sort of deed in the chain of title.
Great comment. Well, I'm glad you brought this up. And folks, the last thing I would just say is that when you're transferring your properties into your revocable living trust or an LLC, or into your business or anything like that. I had a text this morning from a client that was buying a rental property and just said, where do I deed the property? When that happens, please know the quitclaim and the warranty deed or grant deed, the filing fee is oftentimes, and I would say 99% of the time, the same filing fee cost. It's just using the right form and the right language. So don't think this is a bigger cost on our end. We provide this service for clients around the country, and it's we're going to just use the better deed. So.
Right. No, almost always the county recorder's not going to charge anymore, and we're not going to charge anymore for doing it that way.
Yeah. Very good. Well, Jerem, thanks for being with us this week. I know it'll probably be another month till we have you back on the show, and thanks for bringing up that topic. I guess the theme of your tip would be, if you have an LLC, if you have a trust, make sure your properties are deeded to it, use the right type of deed, and get it cleaned up. It's not worth the entity if you don't transfer the property. So
yeah, if the entity or the trust doesn't own anything, it's not doing you any good.
Yeah, good man. Well, Jerem, thank you so much. We'll catch you on the flip side of the summer here.
Okay, sounds good, Mark.
Thank you, Jerem. That's Jerem Bergeson at KKOS Lawyers. You can catch him if you want to consult with him. He's licensed in at least 4 states, but again, we help clients all over the country just via phone, FedEx, fax, and email, helping you live the dream. So another tipster here. Let's keep it rolling. We've got Dustin Johnson, our Chief Operations Officer and CPA for K&E CPAs, always with a good little tax tip here for us to save some money, too. Dustin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Good to be here.
Well, thank you, sir, for finding a few minutes to be with us. What'd you run into this week? Anything interesting?
Well, I've been pretty busy getting some tax returns out. I kind of deferred to Jeremy Martin, one of our accountants here. I asked him, I said, hey, I'm on the radio today. What should I talk about? And he said I needed to talk about business attire and writing that off. I said, oh, Jeremy, we may be opening up a can here, but we'll get into it. Let's talk about
it. I like it.
Because a lot of clients, they'll, you know, come the end of the year, they say, hey, we bought a suit. We bought some clothes for work. We want to write them off. And, you know, we have to turn around and say, you know, did you put a special logo? Did you do anything to make them different from just going down to the store and buying clothes that you could wear every day? Like, well, no, we didn't. And so we unfortunately can't write those off. So
okay, I like this. No, I'm going to have fun with this, Dustin. Let's do this fun here. We've never done it this way before. I'm going to call out a type of clothing. You say yes or no. Yes, it's a write off. No, it's not. Okay.
Okay, hold on. No, little more. Is this a W?
Oh, you want to get a little more background
first?
We own
our own business.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Okay, go ahead.
Is it a W-2 employee, or is this you own your own business?
Oh, you got to have your own business. Yeah, I think this is a good point. You need to tell everybody, if you are an employee working for someone, it is true that you can use an unreimbursed employee expense on your Schedule A. Well, let's get that off the table. So, right? So if you're a policeman and you go out and buy some police clothing attire that the force doesn't reimburse you for, you can write off that clothing, right? We're good there.
Yep.
Okay. So folks, if you work at a restaurant and they require you to go out and buy certain clothing for that restaurant, which you would not wear anywhere else, that's unreimbursed, you can write that off. Now, let me just tell you, that write-off sucks, and it's on a Schedule A itemized deduction.
You usually won't get anything for it, but
no, yeah,
you can write it
off. Don't think you're going to be sipping margaritas on a beach with that one, folks. But anyway, so this is for our small business owners. You know, this is setting up the stage for our guest later here on the show, Glenn Croston. If you're going to start a small business, these are some great write-offs. Okay, so you ready? What do you think? Okay, so
let's try this.
Okay, I'm a mechanic. I went out and bought some overalls to work in the mechanic shop.
Yes.
Like it. I'm a PA working at a doctor's office, and I bought some scrubs.
Scrubs? Okay.
That's a yes. That's a write-off. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there I'm an employee. Sorry. I'm a PA with my own – I'm getting 1099 – or oh, I'm a doctor. I'm a doctor, and I bought some scrubs. Okay. There we go.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. I'm a sales rep – small business owners. These are all small business owners, and I went out and bought a new Armani suit.
Oh, gonna look sharp, but no, it's not a write-off.
Oh man, I wanted that one. Okay.
You need that one too, with an Armani.
Yeah, I'm a small business owner. I bought some polo shirts with the logo of our company over the chest, left breast.
Yep, I'm okay with that.
Write-off, sweet.
Yep, write-off.
Okay. I'm a Century 21 sales rep, and I bought a beautiful yellow jacket to wear around. Selling real estate.
Yeah, no, sorry.
It's got the logo, Century 21, on the breast.
Oh, it does have the logo.
Well, I'm just throwing that out. Twist. Okay, got a logo.
Oh, okay.
We're good.
Have we got the logo?
Yeah, but who's going to wear it? This is the one I have hard with. This is the one I struggle with. The yellow blade. Is it yellow or orange? I don't even know for Century 21. Okay, but that
well,
bright color. No offense, Century 21 reps out there. I know you're out there. So is it yellow or orangey? And I know many of you don't wear those anymore. That used to be the calling card, right? But even without the logo, who's going to wear that jacket? It's required, you know? What do you think?
You know, you'd be surprised what people will wear. But it, you know, if
you're living in Southern Utah,
that sets it apart. Well, true, very true. But if it doesn't have anything that sets it apart as business attire, then the IRS is going to automatically default to you could wear that. I don't know what your personal tastes are. You might like yellow. You might love yellow, and that's your, you know, your first date. You know, hook 'em jacket. You know, so.
I like that. My brother's got a sweater like that in college. It's a whole other story. Okay. It's the kissing sweater. He once kissed three different girls in one day with that sweater. Dude, it was magic. Okay.
Money.
All right. So let me throw the All right. Well, I think we get the point here. I like this. This has been fun. So clothing that's logoed, clothing that has a specific utility or purpose for that occupation, a small business, we're going to be fine. I think it's just going out and buying a new wardrobe of nice clothing because it makes you a better salesman. You're not going to get the write-off. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. Yep. And that's exactly the point. Now, you buy that nice clothing and you put a logo on it, perfect. It can be a write-off. But just to go out and buy that Armani suit so that you look sharp, like you said, you're not going to get a write-off for it.
All right. Man, I don't know if I can put a logo on that new suit of mine. But all right. Well, okay. Good stuff. Okay. Well, this is a great tip, Dustin, because you're right. Many, many small business owners who do need to dress for success want a write-off for that. And we won't even get into hair and nails for the ladies. But I will say your only way out, and we'll leave this for another day, is that if you are in the modeling or acting business, we may be able to get some personal grooming deductions for that because you're in that entertainment industry. But it's going to be tough for anyone else. So, Dustin, great tip. Tell Jeremy thank you for bringing this up, and we got to get him on the show live himself.
We'll work on that one. We'll get him on.
All right. And I know you want to give everybody a reminder. Just say it. Throw it out there.
Oh, man. Yep. September 16th is coming way too fast. So if we haven't got your information in yet, please send it in. Let's get these done sooner than later so we're not going to be calling on September 16th trying to finish everything up. Let's make sure we get it done a little earlier.
Yes, folks, September 16th is when corporate tax returns are due if you file an extension. So if you have an S corporation, and folks, we've got a couple hundred clients that still need these tax returns done, and we're only 6 weeks away. You cannot wait till the last 2 weeks and show up with your books. Get them in this weekend. I know you want to go to the beach, go to the mountains, take half the day and get your books together and send us what you got. Dustin, thanks so much.
All right. Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
You bet. All right. We'll talk to you later.
We'll see
okay,
you.
That folks, Dustin Johnson, our Chief Operations Officer and CPA for the accounting firm K&E CPAs. Now, before we get to Glenn here, if you've just joined us, we're going to have Glenn Croston, author of the book, 75 Green Businesses You Can Start to Make Money and Make a Difference Now. I want to set the stage with my new blog article that you're going to see this week. I want you to be thinking about this so that when you see it come out in entrepreneur.com, you're going to be able to be right on it and go, ooh, I wanted to get those details. So let me just say this. And it feeds right into Glenn's topic of his book. If you're going to start a business, brainstorming and coming up with those ideas. Oh, I can't wait to get to this. But let's talk about some of these steps. I'm helping my son head off to college this fall to start his own business, and he's been working for me for 2 years. I've been preparing for this day. And I know many of you are now looking down the barrel at college tuition going, what am I going to do for my child a year or 2 years from now or this fall? Folks, the answer is helping your student start a small business. Rather than having him work at the pizza joint down the street from the college and making minimum wage and tips, get them into a small business where they can make more money. Learn the steps to implement a business, experience the basics of entrepreneurship, and make more money per hour by owning their own small business. And we're going to brainstorm some incredible ideas here shortly, I know it, that can help you find that right business. So I'm going to give you my 10 steps. I'm just going to rattle them off. You're going to want to read this article later this week. Number one, decide on a business concept. Come up with this something that your student has a passion for and feels confident with. Brainstorm. Sit down. Talk about turning a hobby into a business, something that your student's confident with and passionate about. Number two, nail down your product, your service, and pricing model. Now, obviously, developing a business plan would be the next step, but a lot of times enthusiasm can be squelched with the process of doing a business plan. A business plan could take a month or two, and when you tell your student, get out and build a business plan, the whole thing stalls. Now, I'm not saying avoid the business plan, but if you're going to do one, help them do it and do it together. Number three, give it a name and reserve your URL. Nowadays, you have to think about your web presence at the same time you name your business. Number four, develop a budget to outfit the business. And here's what I suggest. Set it up for a one-semester test run. This doesn't have to be an expensive proposition. You're not going to go out and buy a McDonald's franchise for $500,000. Start something small, give it a little seed money, and say, let's give it a run for a semester. See what the traction is. Create a budget of what equipment and marketing dollars you're going to need to run with it for a semester, maybe two, and see if the business sticks. Number five, create your logo and website. Get that done right away. You have to brand yourself, define your colors, your logos, your images, and get that website up. Customers, that's the first place they're going to go. Number six, make your social media presence known. And I love this because I want the friends of your student to start asking, how's your business coming? Create accountability. Create some groundswell. Let the friends know what your student's doing this fall with their small business. Number seven, develop your marketing plan. I go over this extensively in my new book. And number eight, develop your strategic plan. This is the checklist of what you're going to do over the next 6 to 8, 10, 12 weeks throughout the fall. Your marketing plan and strategic plan are fluid. They're going to grow. They're going to evolve. Carry them around with you everywhere. You cannot avoid these. You can skip on the business plan and move quick, but you cannot skimp on the marketing and strategic plan. Number nine, establish a schedule to follow during the week at school. Your student's going to get busy with homework, classes, and social time, right? They're going to start partying. They're going to have fun. That's okay. That's the college experience, learning how to balance all this. If they're going to work at the local pizza place, they're going to know what hours they're going to be working. But when they start a small business, it takes greater self-discipline. And there's greater rewards. Talk about that with your student. Say you're going to work on your businesses these 2 days of the week or on Saturdays or what. Schedule time to work on your business because the kid will go through the weeks like butter and nothing will happen. They need to have a schedule. Help hold them accountable. And number 10, possibly create a legal entity. A sole proprietorship will probably be sufficient for the fall. But create an accounting system. You can't skimp on accounting. Get them a bank account set up for business only. Get QuickBooks going. Start teaching them QuickBooks. I will be launching my QuickBooks class within weeks. We are shooting video today for QuickBooks. The new basic QuickBooks class will be out soon. Folks, that's my top 10. 10 ways to get your business off the ground. Now, you could use that in any small business scenario to get something going immediately and test the water. But this will be excellent for your student this fall to help pay for tuition. So there you go. Wait till you read the article. It's got more meat to it. I think you'll love it. And so without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest, our star of the show. We're excited to have him with us. This is Glenn Croston, author of Green Business Books. He's amazing. He's written several books. He's a green scientist, author, and entrepreneur. How unique is that? Think of me as being a CPA and a lawyer that can actually talk and chew gum. That's pretty amazing. But this guy, a scientist, author, and entrepreneur, he's an entrepreneurial PhD biologist, author of multiple books exploring ourselves and our world. Glenn is involved in developing entrepreneurial businesses with a focus on green research. he lives an environmentally friendly life in both business and at home, and how to make money and change the world at the same time. So just honored to have him here with us today. Glenn, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for finding some time in your busy schedule to be with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
Well, I am just so excited to really talk with you and have you share your experiences. And, oh my gosh, let me just start with the question I think we're all asking ourselves. How did a scientist become an entrepreneur? Did you grow up with a lemonade stand out on the corner as a kid? Or how did you become a scientist and an entrepreneur, if I may be so bold to ask that right off the bat?
Sure. Yeah. No problem. Everybody always does. And you know, it's really not that crazy. So I studied as a scientist and as a biologist. And I guess as a biologist, you kind of read and hear a lot about what's going on in the natural world, the world around us. And you know, you run into the problems that we're encountering. And as humans grow, and now that there's 7 billion of us on the planet, that there's really kind of no part of the earth that isn't touched by humans. And I guess, though, also having kind of an environmental bent that in the way I look at things, you know, you hear a lot about the problems, but not always a lot about the solutions. And, you know, I think that's what kind of got me going, was having to look around and saying, well, you know, really, if we want to make a difference here, and, you know, who doesn't want to have a better life for themselves and for their kids looking down the road, then we need to start thinking about solutions in a big way and trying to harness the power of business to make those solutions happen. It's not just enough to have kind of good intentions. We need to have a credible vehicle to exert change in a big way. And there's no reason why we can't, you know, build great, healthy, profitable businesses along the way as a means of doing that.
Well, I would presume, as we talk about this, that finding a market and for anybody's product is always a challenge. I mean, you have a great idea, and you want to hopefully create sales and create revenue. When you choose a green strategy, it seems like in the last few years there's been a groundswell of citizens around the world, especially in the United States, that are interested in buying green products. Is that really created enough momentum for people to create green businesses? Is that sustainable in entrepreneurship?
Oh, sure. You know, absolutely. It's green business. The green business world, sustainability has been growing. It's a major part of the economy. There was a study from the Department of Commerce that pegged it at about 300 to 500 billion, depending on how you measure it. And that's just stuff that would be specifically labeled as sustainable. And meanwhile, in the broader economy, there is a growing interest in corporations across the board, large and small, in making everything they do be more sustainable. You know, if you look at Fortune 500 companies, they're all putting out sustainability reports now about their efforts to produce their goods and services in a greener, more sustainable way. So it's not, you know, sometimes we think of the green economy, green products, as kind of a small niche. It's only like organic food and solar panels. But really, it's an opportunity for almost everything we do in the economy to be done, to be produced in a greener, more sustainable way. And who doesn't want that? It's not enough to be green alone. You know, if I produce a green piano, it's not necessarily that alone is going to sell the product. It's got to be something people want anyway. But if it's a great product and it's green, all the more reason to get people running to your product, to get them excited about it, and make them feel good about making a difference as well as getting something that they want.
Yeah, and so do you think now? I know obviously you've written a book here of giving people ideas of standalone businesses that exclusively have a green product, which we'll come to here in a moment. But I guess I introduced this topic early on in the show that any small business owner might be able to create a larger customer base by adding a green, quote-unquote, feature to their business, whether it's a product or a service. Is that do you have any examples of that where a small business owner might be able to add a green aspect to their business and not fundamentally change their entire business but create more revenue and create more customers? Any?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, I think let's take like a restaurant, for example. And, you know, maybe your restaurant isn't producing strictly organic food options, or maybe it's not a vegetarian restaurant. So, you know, you may not think it's a green business per se, but there's plenty you can do in any restaurant to make operate in a greener, more sustainable way. You know, maybe you want to add some offerings to your menu option, which are more healthy and sustainable. And there's a lot of restaurants these days that are doing that, you know, that whatever they offer, they'll add some locally grown, organically grown options to their menu to meet this kind of growing market. You can try to change your operations to be more energy efficient. You know, restaurants consume a lot of energy, and there are businesses now which will help you to go in and to operate more in a more energy efficient way. And by the way, not only is that greener, but it's going to help the business to save money. That's something people often kind of, I think, fail to appreciate is we often assume, people think, oh, going green, isn't that kind of an expensive luxury? And what they don't realize is going green often means you're going to be saving money. It goes right to your bottom line.
Well, I presume you've seen a little bit about this Coca-Cola Life or Coke Green. Have you seen much of that in the news?
I apologize for putting you on the spot. Yeah, I really haven't heard the story about that one. And I guess that, you know, in general, big corporations are aware that this is an important trend and something that they want to tap into. And there's always some concern, you know, how green is that really? What, anyway, so I can't comment on the specific sustainability of that product, you know, without really studying it, except to say that there are people who do that for a living, you know, people who go out and look at these claims about sustainability and try to say, you know, how true is that or not? And whether that really kind of truly earns the label of sustainability. In general, I applaud, you know, any business trying to move in the right direction, trying to do things in a more sustainable way. So, you know, sometimes we get a little caught up on the label. Is that really green? You know, because there's different interpretations of what that really means. But, yeah. You know, it's kind of in the eye of the beholder sometimes. And there are specific certification standards that people can look at to try to say, you know, if I really want to put that label on there and avoid getting any accusations of greenwashing, you know, then maybe there's some strict standards I need to adhere to in that case.
Yeah, no, you bet. And I apologize for putting you on the spot. Ironically, my son brought it up to me, this new green Coke can or Coke bottle that apparently has a more eco-friendly container and lower sugar and calories. And anyway, they launched in Argentina this week. And again, all these big Fortune 500 companies are looking for any angle to increase sales. So, well, but now before we, because I did want to ask you about defining what green really is. But before we get there, I think all of us are a little interested here. What are some of these cool green businesses that you advocate in your book that any young American or middle income family could start a small business doing? What are some of your top 10 or get our appetite here?
Yeah, well, I think there are some big changes underway there that affect our lives in many different ways. And I'll just try to think of a few. And one would be solar, that at least where I live here in California and in many other parts of the country, that solar is growing steadily, that it's increasingly it's going mainstream. It's not just, you know, it's not just for hippies anymore, you know, that this is something that mainstream folks are doing as a way to save money, you know, both good for the environment and to save money. So big opportunities in solar in many ways, you know, and this isn't just rooftop installers. This also involves sales and marketing and finding specific ways of reaching new clients. So that's one that I think is still pretty exciting. I think another one would be involving the home, you know, and making homes more energy efficient. You look at any typical home across the country, and even where people say, well, my house is up to code, you know, being up to code isn't kind of just the starting point for making things more energy efficient and helping people to save money. And, you know, who doesn't love that? Who doesn't love saving some money? So that's, I think, a big one. It can be done in many different ways and includes, you know, maybe sometimes some traditional things, which are, you know, we don't think are green, but insulation, right? Making sure things are really well insulated, lighting, helping people to adopt more energy efficient lighting. These days we have things like compact fluorescents or LEDs, which are just rapidly are revolutionizing home lighting as well as industrial lighting. Making sure your air ducts are clean, making sure there's no gaps that can be fixed. So, you know, the home is a big opportunity with usually tons of opportunity across the country still. I think kind of here's kind of one interesting option, which is greener. I think it's one market which is really pretty exciting is green products for kids. You know, because what parents don't want to have the best for their kids, the healthiest options for their young ones. And so, you know, many people target that audience as a way of saying they want to find products which provide for a healthier lifestyle, a greener lifestyle, greener products, green food, diapers, whatever you're talking, you know, there's huge opportunities around that. Food, you know, and food in many different ways, whether it's, you know, locally grown produce, the farmer's market, greener restaurants, packaged food, you know, greener drink options. So, you know, that's kind of a huge part of the economy, which I think is accessible for people at many different levels, you know, even including starting small, starting at home, and then building from there. So,
So, let me highlight some of these out of your book, which I thought was fantastic. And I thanks for letting me just have you rattle off a few there to kind of get our juices flowing. Some of the ones that I thought were interesting is you had said a paperless office consultant. So I want to start a small business. I want to do low overhead, and I want to start going out and consulting people. Tell us how a paperless office consultant would generate revenue and start a small business in that green space.
Sure, absolutely. You know, I think we've been, I going way back, I don't know how many years, we've been hearing about the prospect of a paperless office, saying, you know, how crazy is it that we just still consume reams and reams of paper, and where does it all go, and how do we keep track of it and store it, and that it just is it's a significant problem. You know, if you look at some industries like the legal industry, or, you know, there's paper is a big deal. So it is a cost. It's not very sustainable because of all the resources it consumes. And it's kind of an opportunity where we have the tools down in a lot of places for digital document management, for going in there and looking at processes around documents and saying, you know, do you really need to print all that? How can we handle documents digitally and keep track of them? And in the long run, not only is it going to save paper, it's going to save money, save time. Things are going to be more manageable in terms of finding, retrieving documents. So it's a good way to go all the way around.
So if I may add to this, if you were interested in trying to find, if you want people to save paper and this is something you're passionate about, something I mentioned a little earlier when we were talking about college students, excuse me, if you're passionate about this, one would want to understand what software services out there, what procedures are out there to go paperless in an office, learn it, master it, and then go out and sell your consulting time. And that could generate some extra revenue and create that small business, which I love. You talked about a green bed and breakfast. What would be entailed in a green bed and breakfast? I've got a lot of clients that own real estate. Where does that come into play?
Sure, you know, so let's say you've got you're thinking about a bed and breakfast type of business, and I think it would be just like any other bed and breakfast, except with a few added concerns. You're going to want to look at your the facility, at the home, and to make sure that it's energy efficient, that it's built and remodeled in a green way. So, you know, your paint, you're going to want low volatile paint, and look at all the other standards that are involved in green building these days. The lighting, the paint, you know, probably you're going to want to think about solar because people are going to look at that. The gardening outside, you're going to want to use some water-efficient gardening in the surrounding landscape. You're going to want to look at the bedding and making sure that it's kind of, you know, low hypoallergenic, using green-friendly materials, sustainable materials, how it's laundered, you know, think about that. What is kind of laundry procedures are involved in the food? You're going to want to probably involve some locally grown organic food offerings for the people staying there. So, you know, some of those simple, easy add-ons could bring in a whole new market for you if you're thinking of something along those lines.
Yeah, no, I like it. I was I was thinking for the green bed and breakfast, I'm just going to let people go camp in the backyard and just say, hey, there you go. Just keep it green. let's just go camp. It's called the KOA, you know, so keep the impact low, please. Try. As one's out there saying, okay, in my community, in my little area of the world, I drive an electric car. Glenn, I want you to know that, huh? I got the Nissan
right on,
Leaf, so I'm trying to be a little bit of, you know, eco-friendly, but I like being in the carpool lane and saving on gas. And that's how it is really with a lot of these strategies, because it's not that you're just trying to change the earth. You're trying to tap into a market of buyers that you normally wouldn't be able to, and trying to make a living. And so it isn't completely altruistic that I'm just doing this for the environment. What would you define as green? I mean, when do you start looking at someone going, come on, that's not a green business? You know, just because you added recyclable napkins in your restaurant, that doesn't mean you're green. How would you define a green business?
Well, you know, that's a hard question. You know, for me personally, I'm glad to see people doing things in a significantly more sustainable way. And it kind of depends on how you define significant, right? If I just add, you know, recycled napkins, sure, that doesn't sound like it's good enough. But if I've made a substantive effort built into my business, and if, you know, maybe I made a mistake here or there, then, you know, I'll probably give somebody the benefit of the doubt. But I think it's whenever a business is trying to, you know, fundamentally, as a fundamental part of the business, do things in a more sustainable way, and they're making an honest, sincere effort in that direction, whether it's perfect or not. Now, I'll add on to that there are specific guidelines which are available to be certified as a green business, and if people look at that, things like the Green Business Bureau, they can find ways of doing that, and they can earn a label where, you know, they can avoid this uncertainty about, you know, it's not just my definition or somebody else's idea. It's just an independent standard which is independently certified, and a way of everybody knowing that what you do is green is pretty much what everyone would accept as green.
Yeah. No. Okay. Gotcha. It's subjective. So as I go out and start this business as green, obviously we want to market it in that way. One thing that I just shot a YouTube video on recently was the new benefit corporation, which you've probably heard of. They're now in about 8 states, where you can register your corporation and basically tell the world, I'm willing to be held accountable. I'm going to be a benefit corporation where I'm going to benefit the world, the environment, charity. So that's taking a very, very public stance on the green nature of your business. But from a marketing standpoint, what do you suggest to small business owners? Do they put green on, like we're a green company, in their letterhead, on their emails? What are some marketing strategies to help them reach those green customers? Where are the green customers? I get, this is a very broad question, because if they go, oh, I'm going to start a green business, well, how do I tap into that green marketplace?
Well, I think it's good to, you know, think about the values of the consumers and the different types of consumers that you might be trying to reach. Because, you know, there isn't just like one type of green consumer out there. Different people have different values, different motivations for doing this sort of thing. And it may not be for everyone, you know. I think that's something to consider as well, that when you use the word green, unfortunately, but, you know, when you use the word green, some people react negatively to that. So, you know, you want to be a little bit careful about how you throw that word around and how and where you use it. You know, the kinds of consumers you might be wanting to reach, there's one group which we might call and this is what Joel McCower has used in his book, which has been out for a few years, one group which you might call the greenest Americans, where these are the folks who are really just excited about the environment for its own sake. They place it at the top of their values, doing the right thing for the environment. They worry about polar bears and wolves and the like. And they'll be willing to pay more, you know. So for them, that's a very, very easy sell. But it's also not that big a group. It's maybe, you know, 5 to 9% of the overall market. So that's one group. And then you've got people who are worried about their home, you know, their home and kids, and they want to do the right thing for their kids. And being sustainable is part of that. If it fits in with that, great. They may not be, you know, they may not put it at the top of their list. At the top of their list is taking care of their house, taking care of their kids, taking care of their jobs. But if you fit into that, if you help them to have better jobs, better homes, and a better life for their kids, then they'll buy into that. So that's the kind of message you want to get out there for that group is, you know, how we help you and your family to live a better life today and tomorrow.
If I may interject, I think this certainly brings up the farming strategy. We in the news over the last month, we've heard a lot about Detroit and its bankruptcy and a lot of these urban farms that are starting to crop up, no pun intended, in these little communities. And this really creates an opportunity for an entrepreneur that has access to a little slice of the earth and to say, you know what, I'm going to grow jalapenos, or I'm going to grow herbs, or some organic, eco-friendly produce, and do it on my little slice of heaven. I could build greenhouses if I'm in a inclement area in the country where I need greenhouses. I could. I look at these farms that are fish farms that are now going in warehouses in the Midwest and growing incredibly high quality fish. All of these little farm ideas really are right up your alley of in a theme in your book is farming. Would you mind commenting on that? What's the success story you've seen from one of your students or readers or just out there working with your clients you consult with in the farm? Is it, show us how it's doable for that small business owner to do something like that without having millions of dollars in reserves. Do you have any example like that?
Sure. I'm thinking of one right now, which is a guy I've worked with, a guy named Dan Gibbs here in San Diego and his business Hometown Farms, which is focused on organic urban farming. And, you know, what their method involves is getting more value out of urban land to make it worth your while. By using their method, by having vertical urban organic farming, they can, and by growing high value crops like vegetables, they can actually produce healthy organic produce at a lower cost than you would get from standard agriculture, where it's grown out in the countryside and involves expensive, a lot more water, chemicals, transportation. So, you know, not only is it going to be cheaper, it's going to be better to produce things in urban areas using methods like what Dan is doing with Hometown Farms. And there's plenty of other people who can do, the, you know, similar things. And you can start small. You can start with a plot near your own home and kind of thinking about what kind of specialty produce would be desirable in that area and how you can get it to market, sell it at farmers markets. Plenty of people who start out small like that, right? And then if something catches on, and then grow it from there.
Wonderful story. And I think it's interesting for these farmers to go out into the local farmers markets as well as local restaurants and offer that produce and I think more and more restaurants, and let's bring it up too. You brought this up in the book, a cafe that's green, and you've already talked about it previously, but just in the show, there's a lot of restaurant owners that are out there searching for organic food and want to add that to their menu. A lot of these, you know, of course, locally owned bistros and things like that. Any examples of a menu item or something that you've seen that just really was a great example that you were like, oh my gosh, this restaurant owner gets the vision here and how it interplays with the entrepreneur. So it's a two-way street. You've got the entrepreneur in the restaurant and you've got the entrepreneur in the farm, and they're both having a win-win, and the customer is having a great meal and helping this whole thing happen. Any examples there?
Sure, absolutely. You know, there's a couple of restaurants in my area, one called Tender Greens, for example, which has built partnerships with local farmers where, you know, it's good for the farmer because the farmer has a direct outlet, and it's good for the restaurant because they have a steady supply where they know where it's coming from, they know that it's good, they know how it was produced. They don't have to worry about the middleman or, you know, making sure that whether this thing that's labeled organic really is organic. So there's a direct chain of custody from the farmer to them, and the farmer gets better value for their money as opposed to going through a distributor, right? So, you know, that's one. And they can produce, they have locally grown, organic, sustainable produce, you know, in everything they do. And it's healthy too, and it's great. And not only that, it tastes great. So, you know, it's I think the kind of thing that people are looking for these days is, you know, it's not enough for it to be green, but if it's healthy, local, in season, and tastes great and is good for you, then, you know, it's kind of a win-win-win-win for everybody there. The consumer, the restaurant, the farmer, forming those direct relationships helps people and consumers to kind of know where the food's coming from, know where it's good, and to build a healthy lifestyle as well as a healthy business.
Yeah. No, I've eaten the Tender Greens. I've actually eaten there. It's interesting you bring up that place. My wife loves it. Actually, the kids enjoy it. This is an interesting point, is that a lot of times I think people miss the point that when you add a green aspect to your business, kids identify with that too. You know, I'm a scoutmaster. I love being out in the woods and camping with the boys. And there really is something in our inner selves that wants to return to nature and be, you know, a part of the earth, and maybe it's too many Bear Grylls shows, you know, that and living out there that has kind of got us excited about being out there as a pioneer. But I think it's exciting. I think kids can pick up on this too. Now, I want to highlight this before we get even closer to the end of the hour here, that Glenn Croston, his book, 75 Green Businesses You Can Start to Make Money and Make a Difference. You can pick it up on Amazon.com. It's a fantastic book. I've written a review myself. Please check it out. Glenn, anywhere else you'd send people for resources on finding that right green business and getting resources to launch a green business product or service or aspect enhancing their current business?
Well, you know, there's one good resource I would look at is greenbiz.com, and that's usually kind of focused at large industrial sorts of companies, but it gives you kind of a flavor for what those guys are working on, what they're looking at, and how what it might mean for them. There's another place to look, which is 3blmedia.com, and it's got all kinds of stories there about sustainability efforts companies are working on every day. And just to get some ideas, poke around, get some ideas about the kind of things that they might want to have a look at. And, you know, Green Business Bureau is a good one I mentioned earlier as far as, you know, what green really means. I think that they can help to get over that barrier and make sure it's not a hurdle along the way.
Well, fantastic. I think those are great resources. I appreciate those points. This is excellent. So I just want to tell you thanks, Glenn. I mean, it's really interesting that you've been able to yourself make an incredible living by helping the environment, helping entrepreneurs, and getting out and explaining it to people. And I think all of us in our business could do a better job of donating some portion of our funds or going paperless. Here at the law firm and accounting firm, we are paperless. Once something comes in, it's scanned. We've tried to stick to that strategy of paperless. But it's a challenge, but I think we're if we all can do something, we can make a difference. So, Glenn, thanks so much for sharing your time with us today. We truly appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. This has been great.
Well, thank you. We'll hope to have you back on. And, folks, I want to wrap up with a couple extra points here. And, well, I know Glenn's listening here for our last minute, too. I want to give you, encourage you to go back and listen to that first part of the show where I talk about 10 steps to get your business launched right away. Look for that article this week that I think will enhance your understanding of how easy it can be to get started in entrepreneurship. And if you're searching for that idea, talk about your student going to college this fall or your children that are still in high school. What type of green business would they want to embark on to help them pay for college? Rather than give our kids a fish, let's teach them how to fish. Let's teach them entrepreneurism. And I think Glenn's done an excellent job of giving us another example or an idea of how we can do it. Folks, thanks for being with me. This is, again, another hour where we try to help you find success in living your American dream. Please look for the workshop in your area this fall. Bring the kids, get them involved, and continue to pass on the dream. pass on the dream that you too can live the American dream, and as a family do it together. So thanks everybody. Continue to listen. Please pass the word, and we'll see you next Tuesday for another round of the Mark Kohler Show.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.